The oxygen flow light came on when he plugged in, so at least the ship's system thought it was supplying oxygen.
Gauge still stuck.
Which was going to make it hard, if not impossible, to figure out when the suit tanks were recharged.
Counting pulse. Don't interrupt.
Esme had no faith that her own pulse was anything like normal, nor did she know how long it would take to replace an unknown consumption, even if she could use her pulse to determine duration. They crouched what seemed like a long time in silence until Bolri unplugged from the access.
There. Should do it. Your turn. If you know your heart rate, give it 3 minutes. Otherwise, I can count for you.
Others first. They were wrestling with that lever.
Don't be too noble, Lieutenant. We might think you were bucking for promotion.
Seska moved over and plugged in, then Freeze, and finally Esme.
Why 3 minutes? Because I've got a test that doesn't depend on the suit's internal clock. We'll need more, but I figured 3 minutes would give us a margin of 15 at least. My suit stopped registering at 1 hour, 58.3 minutes. Is that in the range for the rest of you?
It was. Esme counted not her pulse, but seconds.
Aha!
It works?
I think so. It would help if we could rig up some way of getting us all hooked up at once, though, because calculating the differentials for the waiting periods is a bit tricky.
Give us an estimate. It'd take too long. We don't have tools.
All right. Sweeza, you're still hooked up. You'll need the longest time on. Then it goes down. I'll count it off for you.
Esme wondered what kind of gauge Bolri thought he'd worked out and how long it was going to be, but she didn't want to interrupt his count. She felt vaguely silly hanging there in the dark and silence, waiting to be told it was time to unhook herself from the oxygen supply, but tried to tell herself it was better than being dead.
Time's up. Next.
When they had all tanked up by Bolri's count, which Esme could only hope bore some relation to reality, they still had to decide what to do next.
Sweeza, do you know where all the airlocks are?
I studied it for Major Patak's exam when I first came aboard, but I don't really know. There are some I do remember. On each deck, between T3 and T4, for instance. Once you're on T3, there are airlocks both inside the repair bay and opening on the outer face toward T4.
We could just stay here. We know where this oxygen is. If we knew how long the jump transit was. If it's anything more than a day or so, we've got other suit limitations.
I don't suppose you know a handy external source of snacks, water, and power packs.
And toilets?
Sorry, I believe all those substances are restricted to the interior of the ship during FTL flight.
Then we'd better head toward the next oxygen access and hope that we find a way inside before we have to.
Navigation was going to be their worst problem. Although Kaas's hull was studded with more protuberances than Esme had expected, it was still mostly matte black and unmarked. Creeping, feeling her way across that great black expanse, she felt like a deep-sea creature, one of those her aunt had shown her pictures of. An abrupt change in the topography she could see signaled the drop-off, as it were, into the gulf between T3 and T4. Esme struggled to think which direction to move next.
Down toward the lower decks in the crease between T3 and the core? Along the top of T3?
She didn't even know if the great clamshell gantry supports were closed around Wraith, or if they'd gone into jump with the repair bay open to the dark. As if in answer to her question, light reappeared in the outer dark. At least, she supposed it was light, because her eyes reacted to it, and her brain, trying to make what she saw into the shapes she expected. It looked strange, and more like pale smoke blowing than light, thick streams fraying to looser strands as she watched. But it gave an impression of some angular bulk just off to her left, with towering plumes above. Far away, a tumbled trail of light, a badly plowed furrow, receded redly into the distance. They all paused and moved into the helmet-touching huddle.
If I were a physicist, I just might go crazy. Most of what we've seen since jump hasn't fit most of what I've learned about FTL flight. But since I'm a mere ship's captain, I say it's beautiful.
The gantries are up. Repair base unsealed. If it doesn't have some kind of barrier I don't know about, we should be able to get in that way.
Why'd they turn the lights on now?
Just got the separate power supply hooked up. The Blood Horde's got the bridge. They probably cut power to the wings, maybe even life support. But each wing actually has its own ship support capability.
So we just walk over and hop down one of those openings?
Only if we want to hit 16 or 17 decks down after a 1G acceleration. We might be able to climb down the gantry legs.
Esme had never actually been on the gantries, but she'd seen others up there. The problem was, would their friends shoot them first or give them time to explain who they were?
Our suit comms should work in there, and maybe they won't see us right away.
The walk along the topside of T3 to the first of the openings was easier than the final traverse of the dome, but fraught with its own difficulties. The unhappy light streaming away from the openings illuminated nothing in their path, and a lot was in their path. The sheared roots of the materials transport track supports, cables set to brace the clamshells, counterweights for the mechanisms that raised and lowered them. At least something was always near at hand to clip the lines to. The personnel lift shaft was where Esme had remembered it should be. Far, far below, its controls locked down. She could see a section of Wraith with her skin off, and a crowd of workers in EVA gear clustered around a bundle of crystals that ran out of sight fore and aft. There was at least the comfort of a niche below the hull line, a platform large enough for 20 or more workers to stand waiting for the personnel lift. Esme started down the 10 mesh steps that led down to it. On the second step, ship's gravity caught her feet.
Oh!
She felt glued to the step. By the time she got to the platform, she felt the drag of gravity through every bone, but her head felt clearer. Inside, the light looked normal, if less bright than usual. She glanced around. Only some of the lights were on, spotlighting the workers. Of course, on internal power, they'd conserve where they could. The others came down, one by one, carefully. None spoke until they reached the platform. Esme glanced around. Oxy supply lines in the bulkhead. A real bulkhead, with the green triangle for oxygen access painted on it. A water tap. Even a suit relief valve. Suit maintenance really hated people who turned in soiled suits. A movement in her helmet caught her attention. Her suit's internal clock was working again, and the oxygen gauge squirted up, then dropped, then rose again slowly to indicate that she had 35% of her supply left, 1 hour and 18 minutes at current usage. She started to speak, then realized that if the suit comms were working properly, they could be overheard. And why wasn't she hearing the others? Different circuits? She found the controls in her suit and switched around the dial.
Give me one. Just one. Now a half.
Back to the other channel, the one they'd used into the jump into FTL.
They're on a different setting. At least some of them are.
Seska peered over the rail at his ship.
Makes sense. How do we get down?
Freeze eyed the emergency ladder, which led down to the first horizontal gangway on this side of the repair bay, five decks below.
Carefully. If we try to get the lift up, they'll know we're here.
Better report now. If we hail them on their own frequency, it might be someone I know. They can get Major Patak to identify me anyway.
You're right, but in the grand tradition, it seems a bit tame to let them know. Adventurers who've survived unprotected FTL flight ought to do something more dramatic. Why weren't we provided with those little invisible wire things that spies and thieves are always using to lower themselves from the heights?
Blame the props department.
Sweeza, if you ever get tired of maintenance, I'd be glad to have you on my ship. I wondered at first, but now I can see why the Admiral wanted you on the operational end of this.
Thank you, sir. Now I'll just let them know we're here.
Esme switched channels, hoping she wasn't cutting across another transmission.
Now back, 10th. Just right there.
Lieutenant Sweeza here.
What? Who? Where are you?
I'm up at the top of the bay, on the personnel platform, by Lift 1, with three other officers. Captain Seska and Lieutenant Commander Freeze of Wraith, and Commander Bowery from the schools. I have an urgent message from Admiral Dossignol for the senior officer in T3.
Commander Jarls, head of inventory control, was the senior commander aboard T3. Esme had met him briefly at one of the officers' socials, but didn't know him well. Now he was angry, his stocky body thrust forward in his chair, his cheeks flushed.
What did you think you were doing, hiding up in the rafters all this time? I was told you were going over to T1 to some kind of conference with the Admiral and Commander Ceviche and other important brass.
I did, sir.
And with everything else going on, you just lazed your way the long way around? You can't tell me you got past the blast doors, or that you didn't hear the all call telling everyone in this wing to get their tails to assembly points.
Esme interpreted the emphasis on important brass to mean that Commander Jarls of Inventory Control had had his nose put out of joint because he wasn't invited to that conference. Now he was feeling very much on his dignity.
Sir, if I may ask, how is communication with the rest of the ship, especially T1?
We've got a link to T4 thanks to the access tunnel, but no one else. Why?
Then you might not be aware that the captain was gassed and in critical condition. Admiral Dossignol was injured in a firefight, and that's why the Admiral didn't come along. I have his orders here.
Esme fished them out of her pocket and handed them over. Jarls pursed his lips and gave her a nod that clearly meant, tell the rest.
We couldn't get past the blast doors out of T1. The captain gave us the override codes, but they didn't work. The Admirals felt it was imperative to get Captain Seska and his exec back to Wraith. The reasoning's in that order cube, sir. So we got out to the Specmat Fab far end and followed the transport track partway over the ship.
You crossed the whole ship?
Yes, sir. I don't know if the scans here picked it up, but the ship took hostile fire from beam weapons. The shields held, but the transport track was destroyed.
She waited a moment for any questions, then sprang the big one.
Then it went into jump. That's why it took us so long to get back.
You're telling me you were on the outside of this ship during jump insertion?
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant, you're either crazy or lucky or blessed by some combination of deities I have never heard of. The officers with you confirm this story?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I presume you need a little time to eat or something. We've got a scratch mess set up. My clerk will direct you. Give me time to read these orders, and then I'll want a complete report down to each breath you took, and from the others as well. You can have, what, an hour?
Patak was waiting for her outside.
Where have you been?
Crossing the outside of the ship during the fighting, the jump, and FTL flight. Thanks, by the way, to whoever turned on the repair bay lights. We were having problems up until then.
Well, somehow I suspect I'm losing you permanently for hull and architecture. I'll take you down for what passes for food. Where's the Admiral?
In T1, as far as I know. He was hurt, but alive. The captain was gassed and may be dying when we left.
And here we are, hijacked like a fat-bellied traitor, going someplace we don't know and into trouble we can only imagine. Much good our escorts did us.
Esme found a toilet, then food. Basic mush, but it was hot, and the temporary cook had spiced it with something that gave it an actual flavor. She had expected to feel better after eating, but the warmth in her belly made her sleepy instead. She felt she could sleep standing up, and maybe even walking. It made no sense. She woke with her cheek on the table. Major Patak was a few feet away, talking on the comm. Esme struggled to get her head up as Patak came back.
I talked to Commander Jarls, and he said, what with the jump and all, he'll need longer to assess the Admiral's orders. You're going down for half a shift, at least.
Esme would have argued, but when she pushed herself up, her head swam.